Today on The Grave Talks, removing evil spirits. When Chris and Roseanne moved into their new home in Arkansas, they thought they were about to embark on a positive new chapter in the lives of their family. Little did they know, as they began getting settled in their home, they would slowly begin to realize that they may not be the only residents. Strange noises, unexplained sightings, and eventually, physical scratches began to reveal themselves to the family. Is this the ghost of a lost loved one? Or do Chris and Roseanne need something stronger? Do they need to remove an evil spirit from their home? Paranormal investigator Wesley Fox was called in to help identify and resolve this dark cloud that lingered over their family. Wesley Fox joins us today on The Grave Talks to discuss this case and what happened in the lives of this young couple.
Right off the top of my head is when they first moved into their house. They moved in, I think, when their youngest daughter was either just born or right around that same time, within a year. And it seemed to me nothing was going on. It was all, normal family, good family. Along the way, they started, I think Chris lost his grandma, and that may have happened before or after. But I know as the daughter grew older, she started to kind of experience things like, feeling the grandma, seeing the grandma, and started saying some of the stuff that the grandma would do, little songs and stuff that are, she would have no business even knowing, and she started knowing these things out of the blue, and that's where I know Chris said he started noticing this stuff.
What do you think is going through the parents' minds at that moment where you have a daughter that's talking about these things that otherwise she should have absolutely no knowledge of?
With Chris and Roseanne at that time, they were just kind of like, kids being kids, kids saying things. But then when she starts doing the old time songs that, that Chris's grandma used to do, just sing to Chris, that really made Chris kind of think a little bit. Okay, so maybe my grandma is around and she's seeing her.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at the time, if I remember correctly, Chris and Roseanne wasn't real big believers in the paranormal, so they were just kind of, maybe, but probably not.
Sure.
But I know from the get-go, they were a very Christian-oriented family. They would always go church, they were pretty strict Christians there, and they still are.
Mm-hmm.
But those were the early days, nothing really major going on.
Just enough to raise now, some eyebrows.
Just enough to raise eyebrows. Things didn't start taking more of a sinister turn until they started getting the kids closer with church. Because they knew they had the two kids. They have Justin, which would be the oldest. And I think at the time we met them, I want to say he was 12 and she was 8,
mm-hmm.
when we got involved with that case. I'm not going to say too much about, my ex-partner because, we are no longer working together.
Sure.
Obviously. So I don't want to say too much on her part about it because I don't want to get myself in trouble either way.
Sure. I just want to hear about the case and what went on. That's all.
But, to go back a little bit, when we didn't find this out until later, but when Roseanne was, I want to say she was 15 or 16, but I want to say 16. She started, doing what a lot of young kids do and plays with the Ouija board.
Mm-hmm.
Which at the time, nothing major was happening. When she was playing with it, it was, just like generally a teenager nowadays. It was just kind of a game to her. And after she'd play with it sometimes, things would move. She had her hair pulled at one point, which that's what scared her. And I think that's what kind of where she's like, okay, this is enough. I ain't doing this no more.
Mm-hmm.
But, she just forgot all about it. Stopped playing with the Ouija board, later on met Chris, her and Chris got married, had the kids, and she just kind of wiped that completely out of her mind until things started taking a sinister turn.
one of those things with a Ouija board where you play with it as a child. You think, okay, we had our fun, we're done. Not a whole lot happens beyond those couple things. And exactly that. You don't think anything of it. Is this a common thing where someone plays with the Ouija board at a younger age and then it's almost years later where essentially the repercussion of it makes itself more known?
I actually, it seems like it's pretty uncommon.
Okay.
But, I mean, I've seen like maybe once or twice now.
Mm-hmm.
That's happened, but so to me that's pretty not that common. Usually it seems to be the more common thread within about 6 months to a year.
Sure.
If something's going to happen, that seems to be the more common thread there.
And that's what I would say too. But it's interesting when you have something like this, it almost shows the power of what it has the possibility of doing.
When our involvement actually came with Chris and Roseanne Cupid case, things were starting to go on at the house. You know, they'd already experienced, like, I want to say Brittany was getting ready for school,
mm-hmm.
her and Justin, and Justin was in the bathroom, and Brittany starts to go towards the bathroom, say, hey, you know, Justin, you need to hurry up or whatever case may be, and she gets, like, in their hallway, and all of a sudden she hears these three heavy footsteps behind her, just bam, bam, bam. And then, of course, it stopped, and course, you know, the hair on the back of her neck starts standing up, and she gets really chilled and spooked, and she turns around and nothing there, and she, of course, that scared her, and she took off running towards I believe it was probably her mother and father's bedroom. I think Chris was, you know, just getting ready to go to work, so he just kind of pushed it aside at that point. Some other stuff was going on at that same time with them, which I talk, you know, more detail about it in the book I wrote about their case, Gilliver Schmeeble.
Mm-hmm.
But things got to the point where they, and I know they had reached out to their church to see if maybe they would come in and do a blessing or something along those lines. And, you know, they wouldn't do it. They didn't believe them. They just kind of thought Chris and Roseanne were crazy.
When someone,
and then that was their own church that they've been attending for, you know, quite some time.
And that's a disturbing thing to me, because we hear that quite often, and that quite often is something that people ask, who should we talk to? What should we, you know, talk about this with? And quite often the thought is, you know, your church. When you go to your church and you express this and you get met with what you're describing here of we don't believe you, or we don't think so, that what you're saying is actually going on. I mean, how do you handle that? How did they handle that then with their church? And do you have any more details on expressly, like, what they were saying to them when they're coming to them looking for help?
Well, yeah, I know Chris and Roseanne told their church, their minister, that hey, you know, we got something in our house that's scaring the kids.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what it is, but this is what's going on. And they talked about the footsteps. And I think at that time, Roseanne had an experience with a dark figure as well. And the church, you know, the guide basically just told him, you know, we don't believe you. I'm sorry. You know, these things are not really happening. It's your imagination, which is weird, because it's almost the exact same thing the church told my mom, you know, 30 years before that, when we had our experience.
How did your mom handle that when she was given that that response, or lack thereof response?
She went off.
Yeah,
and told the preacher all about himself. it was pretty funny.
Well, but it's such a disheartening thing.
It is, and with Chris and Roseanne, I know it sent them into some, you know, further depression. They were sent into depression. They didn't know what to do, and, you know, they were just kind of beside yourself. And they happened to come, you know, that they let the kids stay with their grandmother for the weekend, get them away from the house. And then Chris and Roseanne just happened to escape up to Branson. Mm-hmm. And they drove by the ghost tour office, and they decided, you know what? It's just kind of weird. We're having some issues, but let's take a ghost tour.
Mm-hmm.
And originally, I remember I was not supposed to work that night. I was not the tour guide, but something happened. I think the other tour guide called and asked if I could do the tour because they wasn't feeling well. So I said, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it just so happened it was me and the ex-partner and then just Chris and Roseanne. So it was just a really small, just a personal tour.
Sure.
And, of course, as the tour went on, you know, they asked questions. And, you know, I didn't think too much about things for them until after the tour. I mean, we're talking to them after, you know, my actual business part was done. And we're talking just one-on-one, and they start talking about these things going on at the house and said that they lived, you know, in Greenbrier, Arkansas, and that could we possibly come down and check it out sometime for them. Mm-hmm. We said, yeah, you know, let's try to do it in 2 weeks because, you know, the next day I was leaving for a paranormal convention that I was speaking at down in Hot Springs. Mm-hmm. Little did I know, because, I mean, I wasn't familiar with Greenbrier at all, but as we were driving through the conference, you know, to Hot Springs from Branson, you drive right through Greenbrier, Arkansas. And I'm like, oh, hell, heck, you know, let me call these people, let me call, see if I can hold Chris. So I end up calling Chris and saying, hey, you know, dude, we did not realize it, but if you guys are going to be back in Branson by Sunday, you know, on our way back through, we'll stop at your house then. And Chris was like, oh, yeah, we'll be there. So, you know, we went about the next day, went to conference, on our way back through, you know, we got a hold of Chris, we met them somewhere in town, and they took us to their house. You know, not expecting doing an investigation while we were gone. We had very little equipment with us. You know, a couple voice recorders, maybe a K2 meter, and so not even a video camera, so we didn't have much.
Sure.
But we went in, and I know within being there just within a few minutes, I knew I had personally done four quick EVP sessions. And when I started my last one, I went into the master bedroom closet, one of the areas that Chris had talked about, you know, having some issues.
Sure.
And as soon as I opened that door, I mean, last I knew, the partner was behind me, and Chris was like on the other side of me. And as I opened the closet door, she was no longer to be seen. Chris was there. I'm like, okay, where'd she go? Come to find out, as soon as I'd opened that door, she had seen this dark figure come down at her. And it scared her so bad that she had to get out and take a couple quick breaths for a few minutes. So whatever it was, it scared the heck out of her.
Yeah.
By the time we got, you know, to the car, I'm looking over the recorder because, you know, I was going to plug it into the audio of the car and listen to it on the way home. I seen that there was 5 new recordings. So I'm like, okay, where's this 5th one?
Yeah.
So I turned it on, and it's just real quick, and it says, it was something that I couldn't understand, but I could hear 3 voices, and it's like in a different language. And I'm like, you know, what the heck is that?
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, I'd heard some Latin at that point, but not a lot. So I was thinking it might have been Latin, but I wanted to wait until we got home because we had about a 2-hour drive home, and talk to my son, Brandon, because Brandon had just taken Latin in high school. So I thought, well, maybe he will be able to translate this.
Sure.
Well, even as we're going, you know, on our way home, I go through some of the other recordings, and we have at least one other growl in there. And another voice that said for us to pray. And that was a female voice that said pray. So we're like, okay, so this house, they definitely have issues.
Yeah.
At that point, you know, we didn't have the stuff to do a blessing with us or anything else. Either. So I was going to talk to our demonologist at the time, a guy by the name of Joe,
mm-hmm.
and have him send them a blessing kit. That was kind of the thinking at that point. Well, we get back home. I have my son go over that recording. He puts it through everything that he knows, and he's able to translate it into children's souls. The first 2 words of what it said was in English, and it was perfect. It said, I'm here. And then the rest was translated into children's souls.
What is going through your mind when you hear something like that, that's coming through the recorder That is the translation. You're also hearing the word pray from a different voice. How are you processing this?
You know, immediately my attention went to, I've got to help this family. So I called Chris immediately and said, Chris, you guys have got to sleep, you know, all in the same room. Do not get separated. You know, do everything in teams. You know, don't be alone in that house, because this is what we got. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, you know, and I told him, and I expressed and explained to him how dangerous the situation could be, because I knew it was demonic. With what happened to the partner and those EVPs, I mean, I knew we were dealing with a demonic spirit, and it was not going to be pretty.
How often do you come across something that you identify as surely being demonic?
Oh, gosh. Sure. You know, the more we did the investigations, I would say that percentage ended up going up and up, because it seemed like for whatever reason, we got stuck with a lot of demonic cases. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it, you know, being physical with the scratches, or someone being pushed, you know, things like that nature, and with the growls and everything else. I mean, to me, it's just obvious that it points to, you know, demonic spirit.
Is there ever cases where people are assuming that there's something demonic going on, but it's more so just an extremely cantankerous spirit of what was a human that, you know, in life, what you would have looked and gone at, oh my God, that person's like borderline evil, you know, or a real asshole. But in death, they're also kind of the same type of person, but it's spookier. Oh, yeah. When they're dead. How often are those lines blurred, and how difficult is it to decipher between the two?
Those lines are blurred often.
Okay.
Because it seems like the more evil the person was, the more power they have afterlife. And of course, the more power a spirit has. And that's kind of how one of the things I try to look at to figure out, okay, you know, there's nothing physical going on, but this is going on. This was thrown at the person. Now, and I, like, if we'll say a glass full of water was thrown, I'm still thinking spirit. I'm not thinking demon. I'm still thinking kind of spirit. Small light objects levitating, I'm thinking spirit. But when you hear, you know, like, you know, back in the days, you hear about the Warrens and some of their cases and some of the heavy levitations, like furniture, things like that, I'm thinking automatic demonic at that point. But when the lines are blurred, when nothing's really going on, I try to look at other, you know, other things to... Mm-hmm. Put into perspective, like, you know, are they waking up at certain times? If so, what time is it? You know, and they'll tell me stories, you know, well, we're hearing knockings. Okay, how many knocks are you hearing? You know, and stuff like that, people a lot of times don't even think about it.
Yeah.
But that can really have a meaning to it. And that's the reason I ask those questions. You know, footsteps. Well, how many footsteps was it? And a lot of times, if for whatever reason they do remember and it's three, then I know there's at least another little X column to put in the demonic case, because they love to mock the Trinity.
Sure. Sometimes there's those little calling cards that...
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
My thought on that, and I completely agree and understand, I've heard these stories 1,000 times, where the series of three, but I've always wondered too, what if you're really just that super asshole ghost and you're not a demon, but you know that people are going to be even more scared if they realize there's a demon there. So you go, I'm going to make it seem like I'm a demon by knocking in threes, and I'm going to really emulate this just to scare you. Have you ever come across something of that nature where you've determined this is really not a demon? This is someone who wants me to think they're a demon, but they're just a very not good person.
A couple times, yes.
Really?
Not very often.
Where they know how to buck the system, essentially.
Well, because another thing, what I'll do in cases that I'm not sure, mm-hmm. and you're not supposed to do this, but I do it because I'm not scared, mm-hmm. and that is I will provoke the hell out of it.
How do you provoke? What are some of the tactics that you use?
I'm pretty sure it's a demonic spirit. I will provoke the living shit out of it. And what I'll do is we'll pull up some cross, throw some holy water, and then start demanding the name of Jesus Christ, because that usually pisses it off.
Mm-hmm.
The thought of Jesus, anything doing with, you know, God and Christ and any of that just irritates it to its core. And usually we get some nasty responses, or that's where we get a growl out loud, you know, something, you know, on the recorder. You know, usually something will happen, but not, you know, once again, you know, it's not always 100%. So there's times where it still stays silent and it don't want caught.
Do you risk any harm or making the situation worse for those being affected on a daily basis by provoking it?
I say no, because if I do provoke, I know that I am getting ready to do a blessing as well.
Okay.
Which, you know, gets rid of it. And then when I provoke, you know, some of my team members may be there and they know I'm provoking. So if they, you know, they know what the black backlash could be. So some may leave, some may stay. My wife, Nikki, she's right there.
Mm-hmm.
She's usually help provoking.
Sure.
Seems scared at all.
So when you got on the phone with the family and you said, look, we think there's something demonic going on here. We need you guys to stay close together until we can handle this further. What's the reaction you're getting from the family at that point?
Well, Chris's reaction, he just, yes, sir, not a problem, not a problem. He was scared. You know, he was scared for his family, his wife, because, you know, I think he's seen, you know, my ex-partner's reaction. And then I think I was able to cut the, you know, the EVP out and actually send it to him.
Mm-hmm.
I emailed it to him. So, I mean, he knew that we weren't lying, you know, we were serious.
Yeah.
That, you know, this is what was going on. But I told him, you know, just try to do this for like 3 days. They got the blessing kit. They blessed, you know, we stayed in touch with them for a while. And everything was fine for, I want to say, let me see, October, November, December. It's about 3 months later. And that's when things kind of changed again.
Mm-hmm.
With them, what changed, and I can't go into this too much, and I know A Haunting did not cover it. I covered a little bit in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But they ended up adopting Roseanne's two nephews and a niece that were from... you know, a family of abuse, basically.
Okay.
So, you know, being the Christian family that Chris and Roseanne are, they, you know, stepped in to help family and help the kids, ultimately. But with, I think, the negativity that you know, that they came from when they brought them back into the house, that kind of helped wake up, you know, the demon again.
Sure.
And I think that time he was even more angry, and he was determined, because the things got much worse.
So almost what, if I'm understanding correctly, when they did that initial blessing, it tampered it down. It essentially maybe diluted the waters a little bit, so it wasn't as strong as it was before. But eventually it got muckier and muckier, and then it found basically new things to feed off of, the distress of the new children who had come into the home, and the good intentions that the family have. It's finding all that as basically new batteries to reinvigorate itself.
Recharge, yep.
Yeah, okay.
Because I think what the blessing did, and I've always been a big fan of the Warrens,
mm-hmm.
because in a lot of the stuff that, you know, Ed Warren talked about, I've always been a firm believer in, because I've seen a lot of the same stuff with, you know, my own eyes, or witnessed the same kind of stuff, to believe what they say to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying all their cases are true or anything, but, you know.
Sure.
But they talked about, you know, a lot of times when you do perform blessing, that sometimes that demon will just kind of lie dormant. But if you don't do and keep the positive stuff in the area and everything else, you know, it it will wake up. It will wake back up. And I think bringing this negativity in,
yeah,
in a sense, woke it up. Mm-hmm. So therefore, I mean, it was kind of like World War III. Suddenly, and sometime in the middle of January of 2014, I do believe, it may be 15, I'm losing years, but I think it was 14. Mm-hmm. Chris and Roseanne, they came to Branson and they sent us a message. Hey, Wesley, you know, I think it's back. We're coming to Branson this weekend. Can we please meet with you guys and just kind of talk to you a little bit, tell you what's going on? And of course, you know, we were absolutely, you know, not a problem. Mm-hmm. Now, this is funny. It wasn't then, but it is now. But at the same time, we were working on Nolan's case, which was ended up being the other episode of A Haunting Heartland Horror.
Sure.
So we're working on these two bad cases at the same time. But we met with Chris and Roseanne at the McDonald's there. Are you in Branson?
I am.
All right. We met them at the McDonald's right there on the strip, you know, by Walmart.
Sure.
We met them at that McDonald's. You know, it was just like, you know, any January night in Branson, you know, Branson's pretty dead, mm-hmm. you know. Not really very many tourists. And it's cold, of course. Mm-hmm. We all go into McDonald's. We meet, you know, kind of get something, a little something to eat, kind of talking a little bit. And then, you know, they're telling us their stories about some of the stuff that's going on. Like, I'm trying to think of one of the things that I know that happened. I want to say Brittany seeing the dark hooded figure in her room was one of the things. And of course, at this point, instead of like, oh, she's just a little girl, she's imagining it, they believe her because of the stuff that happened before. Justin, I think this was right about the point that he actually got scratched for the first time. You know, in A Haunting, they show it, you know, before our first visit, which, you know, they just kind of put place in things to make the series or the show, you know, more Hollywood-like, more better.
Sure.
And they have such a short time span to put everything in. Mm-hmm. So, but that happened, I do believe, right before we came the second time. And so they were telling us these things. And then Chris could start, he was really sensing these things. You know, he was feeling them almost like he was becoming, like maybe his psychic gifts were woke up. And honestly, I didn't know how much I believed. I kind of thought maybe he's just pulling my leg just to help pull out some drama. Mm-hmm. But as we're there at McDonald's, he says, Wesley, he goes, it's right here with me. And he pulls up his arm, you know, his sleeve, his arm. Mm-hmm. And he pulls up the sleeve, and all of a sudden, with my very eyes, I see three scratches coming down his arm, and they're in McDonald's. So, of course, as I'm watching these scratches go down his arm, he's watching the blood drain from my face. So I'm like, holy crap. So for whatever reason, I forgot why. I think we decided to go into the men's bathroom, meet him and my son, Brandon. Because we thought, okay, because we're trying to take pictures of what was going on, maybe we could capture this entity that's scratching him.
Yeah.
So we thought, well, maybe if we bounce, you know, the camera flash or whatever off the mirror in the bathroom, maybe that we can capture it. So we go into the bathroom. As we're going in there, and you know how the McDonald's is, they have like the open area for the stand-up stalls for men. Then you got the one closed door for the sit-down stall.
Sure.
That door was closed, and as we walked in, you heard like a walking, just bam, 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 bam. And I have this on video, too. You hear this thing walking around, and all of a sudden, my son Brandon, I don't know what happened. He grew a pair or something. But he went over there, he opened that door, and kind of pushed it open and stepped back, and there was nothing there. And the noise stopped. So, I mean, it scared. That was one of the first times, in this case, that I can tell you that I was scared. Because that was just freaky to all get out. You know, we took plenty of pictures. Nothing ever come out. But we do have that video of that. I have that on my computer somewhere.
And all happening at a very unsuspecting location, too, of all places, to have the experience at the McDonald's in front of the Walmart.
Can I have a McScratch, please?
Yeah, I mean, that's almost one of the most unsettling moments, I would think, because, you know, you can kind of brace yourself when you're in a haunted location that you know is haunted, or you're doing an investigation. There's some of that there. But when you're just sitting there having your McChicken, it's not exactly what you're expecting to have occur. So you have this occurrence in the bathroom. I'm assuming you are a bit more convinced than you were at the beginning of the dinner.
Oh yes, much more.
What transpires beyond that?
Well, that night we already had kind of a plan in place that we were going to follow them home that weekend, and we were going to conduct a full-fledged investigation. You know, once again, my son Brandon was coming. At that time, I think Brandon was 16. But, you know, Brandon's, I don't know, he's still doing the stuff with us today. So he's learned a lot, listening to me run my mouth, I guess, at presentations and even part of the investigations. You know, he's always been a big help.
Sure.
But so I wanted him there. And then I had called my nephew, my nephew Mark. And Mark is unlike me. Him and his wife, they really don't believe. They don't necessarily don't believe, you know, so they're like that fine line. Nothing's ever happened to them, so we really don't believe. But at the same time, if these weird things are happening, we're not going to make fun of you. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of like that.
Sure.
So, I wanted to get him away from the situation him and Christina were in, just to get them away, because Mark had just lost his mama, which is my sister. And I wanted them to, just get away.
Sure.
Get away a little bit and help us, you know, because we'd, you know, played around a little bit, and you know, we'd go a little ghost hunting there, and every time we come back home for a couple days, and they go out with us, and they had a lot of fun. So I thought, you know what? What the heck? Let's bring them into a bad one.
Sure.
But so they had agreed that they were actually going to meet us in Greenbrier. And that next morning, we were all leaving for Greenbrier. Now, that night, at the hotel room, Chris and Roseanne were staying there at, oh my gosh, the Classic Motor Inn, I do believe. And they were outside smoking. And a little hallway that goes down, I guess, between some of the rooms and the breakfast room and then the pool area. But, you know, Roseanne was outside smoking and Chris was outside with her. And as they were outside, Chris had like a full 20-ounce bottle of, I do believe, Dr. Pepper or Coke. And all of a sudden, it just went flying, just like somebody had kicked it. And there's no wind. So Chris looked at Roseanne's like, okay, it's time for us to go. So they get up, they go in the motel room with the kids, and I know that night they were tormented by knockings and footsteps, and one of the kids seen the dark figure once again then. So, I mean, it followed them to Branson. So they knew they couldn't just, you know, move out and all that stuff, which that was confirmed at McDonald's.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Wesley Fox about removing evil spirits and this very compelling case originating out of Arkansas. In part two of our interview, we will discuss what the demonic spirit wanted and what it did when it followed the couple out of town from their home. How did the spirit try to prevent the investigation from even taking place? What was the goal of the investigation? Was it to drive the spirits out, or was it to identify what it was? Did the second blessing of the home stick, and did it keep the demon away? Was anyone ever successful in driving this out of the home? And we'll ask the question, are some people more susceptible to be attached to by demonic forces? Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.